Hello, listeners. Welcome to GQHQPQ here in the Tech Cube. My name's Scott. I'm here with Mark.
Hi.
I'm here with Louis.
Hello.
And from Deco Comics, I'm here with Rossi.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm feeling great.
Excellent.
Yeah, Edinburgh's wonderful.
The reason that Rossi's on today is your company is...
Deco Comics.
And they do...
They turn school information that you find in the curriculum into entertaining comic strips that feel like being... They feel like a comic before education.
Nice.
So basically breaks down the motivational barrier, makes kids want to read it because it's all about the story and the characters, and you see that instantly. So it's just turning it into something that a lot of people would find more worthwhile doing.
Oh, nice. Cool. So you're tricking them into learning.
It is a bit of that. It's a bit of sneakiness.
Making learning more fun, Mark.
That's right.
Sorry, yes. Hoodwinking all the kids.
No. It's...
Yeah, fun learning, flirting. But the
flirting.
At the same time, we're not ashamed of it. Like, we do say that this is an algebra comic. This is a figures of speech comic. But, like, it's almost like we're sort of picking people up and challenging them and saying, like, yes, we can make this fun. Just try us. Try not want to look at this. You know, try not want to find out what happens next. Because that's the art of entertainment. Like, if you just said to someone, Lord of the Rings is about a little man who goes looking for rings to throw them in a volcano, it's not that interesting on paper.
No.
So with the trailer and all that, you've got to make it look like that's really, you know, that's really interesting.
Engaging.
I really want to see that. So that's the approach we take with the comics. It's not just sort of like, oh, this is a fun comic about it. Hey, wait a minute.
Hang on a second. You made me learn stuff.
No.
Oh, that's really cool. How long has this been? When did it start?
How far should I take you back? Should I take you back to the origins?
Yes.
Where were you born?
Story.
The mists of time.
Oh my goodness, right. Okay. So,
this is a prequel.
This is it. You know, if you thought Wolverine had good origins, you've got nothing to this. So basically, when I was rubbish at school, always getting things wrong all the time, dyslexic, difficult to read. I could read and understand words, but I'd so often get to the end of a sentence and realize that's not gone in. I've understood the words, but that information hasn't gone in.
Yeah.
And I was good at all the subjects that didn't require this ability to read, write, and listen and do that efficiently. Like, I was good at art, drama, creative writing, things that you could have a creative approach to. But everything else just seemed to come in the form of worksheets, textbooks, and class lectures. And you guys, you know, when you leave school, you suddenly become interested in that stuff in your own way.
Yeah.
But like in this system where it does nothing to interest you on the page, and it's all just about how good a listener or how good a reader you are, you know. I was one of the losers of that system. You know, I'm bottom of the barrel sort of thing. And so when I got to secondary school, that's when I got the dyslexia diagnosis, and that was great because I felt, oh, it's not because I'm just a feckin' idiot. You know, like I'm actually, you know, there's a reason for this. There's a logic to it and all that stuff. But it didn't make things easier. I got extra time, but it was just more extra time to fail because I still didn't understand questions correctly.
Right.
I still, it was still taking me a long time to even write the information and write it in with enough words and, or, you know, without using too many words and so on. And I still just kept on struggling. Mind maps weren't helpful for me personally, or at least I never found out how to do them properly.
Yep.
Mine just ended up being a mind mess. And so, yeah, it eventually got to the point where I got really frustrated with this. And I just thought, if I'm going to fail anyway, I might as well enjoy it. So I thought, you know, I don't find it difficult to read a comic like the Beano or the Dandy and all that stuff. You know, I don't know. Do you guys ever read any of that stuff?
Like, I did. I used to read the Beano, but it was a special treat because obviously we didn't have it in Vancouver. But my dad would come here on business trips and bring me back a Beano. And actually, when I was looking through your comic just now, it reminded me of the Beano, like the style of art and the characters and things like that.
I'm so glad that because the Beano is a heavy inspiration.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know,
that's
like,
really cool.
That sort of wacky style. And you know, we've tried to do a bit more rendering and sort of like Disney touch up style to it to make it, you know, look and feel really good as soon as you look at it. Yeah. I loved reading in the Beano and the Dandy and all that stuff. So I thought, what if all my revision notes could be kind of in this format? Because then at least it's going to be bearable. At least I'm going to enjoy myself. I'd rather still fail, but have a really good time while I'm failing. Because you have to work hard. You owe your parents that much and all that. So working hard but enjoying myself, that's how I saw it. So I turned my revision notes into comic stories about just the characters bantering the information back and forth and put humor into it that I liked and made it into something that it was as if I was making it for myself. And I just found it really fun because it was a fun comic and it was fun to read back on. And it was easier to understand all this modern studies information I was putting into it this way because I had a visual and a point of narrative to follow it all with and remember it all by. And I just made more of my modern studies revision notes into these comics and thinking I was still going to fail, but this is way more fun. And it actually feels like for the first time, like it's going in. Like,
right.
Is that what most people in my class, like, is that what they usually feel on a day by day basis? Anyway, long story short, I did that exam, got my first grade A.
Congratulations. Yeah.
And I'd gone in and gone out knowing those answers, feeling like I understood those political systems and retained the information. It could just be as simple as that is what I was thinking. Mm. Like, it was just retaining the information was that much easier by doing it in this way. And it was so much more fun too, because it was done with goofy characters and fun drawings and all the things you go to look for in entertainment, you know. That is where it began, essentially. It began in my fifth year exam revision when I was about 17 years old. And then it was in the back of my mind until then. And then in 2015, I decided to make it into a business.
So, wow. That's really interesting.
Do you still have those original notes?
I do, yeah. They're nice. At home. As in, I didn't bring them with me.
We need one relic.
Mint? Are they mint condition?
They're like pressed and framed in the wall.
Well, maybe one day they will be. I mean, I think they still have like gravy stains on them from when I was reading them during dinner and stuff. But
when I look back at my study notes, like I wasn't the best in school. I enjoyed school, but I wasn't super academic. Like, I don't know. I was probably more into sport, and you know, I dropped out of physics because the teacher just looked at me and went, "I can't help you with that." And I was like, "Okay, right. I think it's time."
So the teacher just gave up on you.
Yeah, pretty much. I asked him. I was like, "Oh, can you help me with this?" And he just looked at me and then walked away. So I was like, I think that's a no." But like looking back at my study notes, and they'll pretty much just, I'll read something in the book and then be like, "Yeah, that looks important," and then just write down pretty much exactly what's in the book. It's like, well, no one's going to read my study notes, but I may as well just read the book. Like, you know what I mean? And a lot of things didn't sink in. But then sometimes I could just like remember it's like, oh yeah, that's right. This is what I need to write down, not why I need to write it down, that sort of thing. So that's quite interesting that you came up with like with your own method of doing it.
Yeah.
Well, even hearing your study methods there are quite interesting. I mean, like, do you remember that information to this day, or do you
do you want to ask him a physics question?
Not physics.
No, it's a heck of a question to ask anyone, frankly. But
if you gave me a topic and asked me a question on the topic, maybe. But it depends what it was. Yeah. A lot of that thing.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. Like, that's what we do, is get people to remember stuff they learned in school.
It's true, actually. Yeah.
Get them to apply it in a pub situation. That's
right. Do you guys remember much from your second or fifth year French exams or maths exams and stuff? Like,
some of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've not thought about this in a while.
Yeah. I mean, I probably couldn't do my like higher school certificate and get the same score. But I feel like I could probably
some of it would still be there.
Study a bit better. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to flip that question on its head, do you remember your favorite theme tune from your favorite TV show?
Oh yeah, 100%. I could sing it all the way through.
Just a few months ago in this discussion.
Really?
Yeah, everyone gave their top five.
Oh really? What was yours?
But I had the Batman animated series one. The original Teen Titans. And then I can't remember there are two.
Why is DuckTales not on there?
That was on mine.
Yes!
That was on mine, yeah.
I think I'm too young for DuckTales.
DuckTales, it was great.
Come on.
And then I had Arthur and something else, I'm sure.
Oh, Arthur.
I had Arthur, yeah. I had Arthur on there.
Arthur taught you all your morals.
Walking down the street.
But that's like kind of the thinking behind this. What I do is just that, you know, like those things people actually don't just remember, but they care about a lot more. Why are we still in this sort of hangover from the Industrial Revolution where it's like, the information's there, now learn it in this way?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like
Especially when you can just look up anything really on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about applying it instead of just remembering it.
Yeah, applying your fact, or like, taking disparate facts and kind of synergizing them or putting them together and that sort of thing.
Making it a useful piece of information.
Yeah,
not just,
exactly. Not just rote.
Copy and paste job.
Yeah. Well, I used to teach martial arts. And so I used to have kids that were like, you know, you're trying to teach them how to defend themselves. And you don't want to tell them, it's like, oh, some big baddie's going to, you know, come and grab you or whatever. You need to be able to do this. So we used to make games of like, all right, you're on a team, whoever the most people can get to this wall, you know.
Oh, brilliant. So
things like that, but you know, make it fun. And then
And then you'd punch them in the face.
You were the big baddie.
That's right. Someone really bad around here.
I won again. That's the 50th week in a row. And I was reading on your website that some of the other techniques that you use, like the font for dyslexic people?
Oh, yeah. The font we used originally was like, it's called Dyslexi Font. It's made by a really, really nice guy called Christian Boer. Mm-hmm. And he's developed this font where each individual letter is differently shaped.
Right.
From a graphic design point of view. And it's the reason for it is because dyslexics often see things as visuals, as pictures. And so if each individual letter looks like an individual picture in itself, because, you know, there's, I don't know how confirmed, I'm certainly not qualified to confirm this, but from what I hear, dyslexia isn't such a big issue in China because the literacy there is all done in symbols, you know, rather than lots of letters together making a word. So with dyslexia font, it basically makes each letter a bit more individualized, and it makes apparently just as a much better effect on the brain for dyslexics. Now, someone who's mildly dyslexic like myself, I felt that there was a difference reading it. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's comments and testimonies from people it's made even more of a profound impact for. But having said that, I have to apologize to Christian because we don't use this font anymore because we needed a comic-friendly font as well, one that was a bit more wacky. And his font was very good and functional, but we still need to obey the laws of comichood.
Right. I can say that was the inspiration to yours.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
It led us on to Shortstack, which is what we currently use now. It's another dyslexic-friendly font.
Right. I read about that a few months ago now where, you know, Comic Sans is much maligned. Everyone hates Comic Sans.
Bring that up, yeah.
Yeah. It's like the worst.
I don't understand why.
Yeah, well.
I missed the whole reason why it got all this hatred. Like,
but at the same time, it is, I've read that it's actually quite good for people with dyslexia because the letters are quite distinct in that way.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's funny that, you know, it gets this bad reputation as being unaesthetically pleasing or whatever, but it's actually quite useful for a lot of people.
I'm willing to say it on this podcast that I love Comic Sans. It's going to give me so much unconditional hatred.
That's fine. We're all about hot takes on this podcast.
Revolution.
Claim whatever you want. You don't need information to back it up. I mean, as a company, that's not where it stands.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, what about you guys? Like, did you didn't use computers at school or anything for your exams or anything, did you? Like,
for exams?
Yeah, like, I'm leading up to, like, did you ever use, or in your work, have you ever used a particular font just for the very basis that it's nicer to look at or easier to read?
I mean, I have my preferences.
Oh, come on then, Mark. What's your hot font take?
Hot font take.
I definitely use Comic Sans. Definitely.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I tried to, like, theme my fonts with whatever. I don't know if there was any real link. Yeah, like the fonts to whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what a chemistry font would look like.
Scientific, rigid, and like no curves, maybe all lines.
Just did all mine in word art.
Yeah, the whole thing is
every word. Single word, like that.
Shadows.
Upwards, downwards, leftwards, rightwards.
Yeah. Animations. This didn't print out properly.
All the star wipes. Just a different. There's a different page printed out. There's a star going across it.
A flip book.
But I mean, all those kind of things come into play when you're making a comic, I suppose. You got to think of the font.
You have to
think of the colors and the overall design. Is that you that does that? Or
how the comics work is that I basically write them. Then I usually will do the roughs, so lay out the panels and the rough pictures and stuff. And then the artists will come and make it look beautiful. But it's weird, even though they're all really talented, there's a difference between drawing a word and drawing a picture or drawing an image, you know? So it's actually not that easy to make it look right.
Do you have a big team?
A big freelance team.
Yeah.
We have about a network of 12 artists.
Oh, wow.
12 and growing.
Cool.
Yeah, and in terms of the management team and such, there's about 3 of us full-time and 6 of us altogether.
Lots.
Yeah. There's a fair few of us. Yeah, you still get the feeling like we didn't research how do you make a comic studio and before starting. We just kind of like went with the flow and saying, it'll all come together in the end. So now we've just got this sort of dog's breakfast of talent that we just need to rearrange the peas and mashed potato, the gravy, all into the right parts of the plate. But we've got all the right pieces are there. We just need to organize it, you know.
Oh, cool.
Cool. And so, not everyone is dyslexic, are they?
No, we don't turn people away from not being dyslexic enough.
You do the font test with them and then you can see.
Yeah, we give them a reading test. Like, read that to me right now. Out loud.
What's your favorite font? Algerian. You're out. You're out. You're gone. It's done.
Comic Sans, you're in. actually, it's a point with these comics that we don't make them just for dyslexic people. Mm. Like, a specific point is, yes, these are helpful for dyslexia, also autism and ADHD. Mm. And other conditions that make conventional learning a bit more complicated or difficult. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's helpful for those things, but we want to make them very much enjoyable and preferable for people with no struggle, just by the fact that it's a fun comic. And it is, you know, the art of using panels to put concise information in is actually quite a proven and useful technique for revising information and absorbing information. So basically, we want to make this for everyone. And part of the reason for that is that a big problem with being dyslexic or being that problem child in class is that you get given special attention, special help, particularly when you get to teenage years. You don't want that unwanted attention. So it sort of fights the stigma if everyone is reading from the same resource and enjoying it and benefiting from it.
No, that's very true. Do you find it ironic or funny in a way that after all these years later, you're now revising all this school work and the subjects and the themes that you had kind of fallen or you'd let fallen or you didn't quite get the first time around, and now you're having to go back over them again and write revise. Comics about them.
I just gotta say, it's a great irony.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's brilliant. Right?
Disliked school as much as I did. You know, now I'm coming back to it all and, you know, working with it on a daily basis. So it's fine in a way because we're doing it for ages 9 to 12 at the moment. Mm. We do want to make it for older and younger, but we're starting right now at an age where it's when you really start to develop your relationship with your learning. Mm. And if you've got dyslexia, that's when it really starts to rise to the surface. Because when you're in primary 1 to 3, you think you're good at everything. You
know? Right, yeah.
You know, so. Arrogant kids. That's what we're getting at.
That's right.
But yeah, like, that information is a lot easier to understand when you're older as well. Mm. You know, like, put me in front of university level information and I'll start to flounder like I did at school if it's the normal way of doing it. You know, if I'm to do it through textbooks and reading and lectures. But nowadays, just because I've lived a little, I'm a better reader now, and I can do all these things. That information is quite easy to access. Mm-hmm. And that's the point, actually. I got better at reading now. I can now read books for fun and even read a business contract if you give me enough time. But I got better at that through reading more comics and graphic novels and story-based computer games in the end. You guys have played your Zeldas and your Fire Emblems and Final Fantasies and all that stuff, you know, games where they don't have voice actors necessarily and you have to read the dialogue that's going on. By embracing more of that in the end, I found out actually this is what's helping me to read more, not trying to get into a book that I find impossible as soon as I open the page, sort of thing. So yeah, I just wanted to add that point in there, is that you can actually get better at the things you struggle at, but why not start from the areas that you're it's common sense. Yeah. Start from the areas that you're stronger in or that you're most attracted towards. Absolutely, yeah. You know?
And so you're making these comics and how are you getting them into schools, or how does that work?
Basically, how we're getting them into schools currently is we just go to the door or we call them up.
Nice.
And it's actually through word of mouth that we spread more than anything. You know, anyone who's read these comics, compared to what we wanted to do for the world, it's quite small, but it seems to be more or less 100% positive.
I read some of the feedback on your website.
Yeah.
I was really like sort of gushing in praise for stuff like that. It must feel really good.
it's really rewarding when you get that because you just feel, yes, this is working. But the frustrating thing for any independent company starting up is the biggest obstacle is getting it out there. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you, it's not enough just to put it in front of people. That's what we've recently discovered. It's like you can't just tell someone that educational comics exist. It's not enough to connect it to their wallets necessarily. Like, they'll think that's a great idea.
Right.
What we want to do is actually work with a distributor or find a distributor of some sort or someone who's got the ability of reach and connections to get this already made product, an already proven product, into the hands of the people that need it most. So currently we've actually been selling it to parents more than schools. It's because parents are easier to access. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they want to get their child reading and learning for fun. Mm. So that's a bit easier. But schools, we want to combine all the maths. I mean, it's not very helpful for a podcast, but our comics basically have, on the back, it tells you there's a myriad of subjects covered per comic. And that's just because we want to show that any subject can be interesting, whether it's maths, whether it's English, whether it's history or whatever. We want to make compilations now. We've got nearly 12 comics out now. We want to compile all our maths ones together, all our English ones together, and make more school resource savvy versions, if that makes sense.
Kind of like
and
courses, sort of.
Yeah.
Or like supplementary materials to existing books and textbooks and things.
But this is the thing, because they're never going to replace...
No.
Well, actually, never say never. You know, but certainly in the near future, I don't see them as like get rid of your textbooks, put these in instead. You know, I see them more as they're a great supplementary material, and just as long as they're in a form that teachers know how to use. And I suppose what I say I don't want them to replace textbooks is until they've existed in schools, being used as textbooks for a couple of years. If it's working flat out better than textbooks, and there's no need for textbooks, then
then suppose it can happen.
Let Deco take over your establishment. No bias, of course, but we have got them into some schools, like Highland Council. Distributed them to over 29 of their schools.
Oh, so fabulous.
We've got about 50 and 60 schools under our belt in total across Scotland and England. And one school in Finland, wonderful school, Kilo International School, they ordered a huge batch, and then they're actually thinking of trying to replace their whole way of educating through the comic way.
Oh, really?
Rather than through textbooks. Yeah, because schools across the UK, you'll find they're actually bringing in more graphic novels now to encourage children to read. Mm. So the ground's getting pretty fertile for something like this.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But if people want to find out some more information or how to buy or to get involved, where can they find out information?
Or more about Deco?
Yeah.
You can find out more about Deco Comics on our website, which is just www.decocomics.com. I forget we're not in the 90s. We don't need to say www.
No, we don't,
website anymore.
But it is Deco with two Ks.
We'll put
two
a link in under the podcast anyway.
So it's decocomics.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram. See all our lovely little pictures. And we've released an Indiegogo campaign as well.
Oh, that's a good segue.
Explain what that is.
Basically, the comics are doing great. They're helping all kinds of learners, and they're being embraced by all kinds of readers. But a printed magazine can't work for everyone, in terms of, like, some children are of an older age but a lower reading level. They might be age 12 or 13 but have a reading level of 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. Some forms of dyslexia can lead to that. And they don't want to read baby material that suits their level. They want to read the same mature content as everyone else, but they're prohibited by that reading difficulty. That's just one example of an issue. Some people might also have visual stress and the colors don't work for them.
Yep.
Another simple issue is that the fact that the comics come with a mix of subjects, some might want to organize them not in just a maths, English, and science comics and so on, but also into, you know, these are my homework comic stories, these are my favorite comic stories, these ones are my favorite characters, and so on. You know, ability, all these different things that you're limited with by a printing budget, you can see to these issues in the digital world and through technology. So we've started an Indiegogo campaign to make an app that we've been wanting to make for a long time, which would allow us to not only release digital versions of the comics, but the app can allow you to customize the reading experience to whatever your preference is. Adjusting how many words in the speech bubbles, so have an easy read, a medium read, and a full read. And that also allows progression as well as reading preference. It also allows you to change the colors of the speech bubbles and actually put colors in the backdrops of them to make them easier to read if you've got visual stress, or apply a colored filter over. Some people with dyslexia require tinted glasses or a colored overlay to make it easier to read. So with a digital app, it just does it automatically for you.
Yeah, oh, brilliant.
Of course, it would allow you to index the comics as well to your own preference, you know, categorize them in whatever way, in whatever relationship you have with them, whether you use them directly for your schoolwork or if you just want them for your favorite characters or so on. So basically, we can keep updating the app, and the app allows us flexibility, endless flexibility, in the way that the magazine can only do so much of. Mm-hmm. So we chose Indiegogo because we didn't know how well this would do, and it means that any money we make, we get to keep. And we get to at least get the app started at long last.
Oh, lovely.
So that's what we're currently doing. And we've only got a few days left.
Oh, brilliant.
So that's what you look for. It's Deco Reader Indiegogo. And Indiegogo, for those who are listening that don't know, it's just Kickstarter, but it's like Kickstarter's little brother or little rival.
So people can like donate.
Well, they donate and they get a perk, shiny perk for it. So.
Oh, right.
So it's more like an investment sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. They if they donate, say, £10, we send them a signed comic.
Well, if you need us to sign any of them, then...
Hey, extra incentive. yeah, but for whatever you donate, depending on the size of the donation, you get a big fat reward to say thank you.
In your own life, do you have a favorite graphic novel or novelist or comic that you read yourself?
Well, in terms of like a series, like the Beano and Dandy are still a big favorite of mine, but yeah, there's a few people I admire. Doug Tenniple's work. He's the original designer of Earthworm Jim.
Oh, right. That was another one of my favorite tune songs.
Really?
Or theme songs. Yeah, yeah. It was the Earthworm Jim.
Earthworm Jim.
See, I hear for all time. Darkwing Duck and Earthworm Jim. They were two of my big ones.
Yeah, he's a really funny guy. I've had the fortune to meet him once, and he's just lovely. But he also makes graphic novels. My taste always seems to veer one way or another towards cartoonish sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Films. I'm a big film fan for, you know, things like Gladiator and Oh Brother Where Art Thou and Kung Fu Hustle. You know, I love all this stuff. And although it just sounds irrelevant, that stuff does make its way into what inspires me. It doesn't all come from Beano stuff. Mm. And like, you know, the little robot character, there's nothing really like him in the Beano.
No.
It's more my computer game interests that fuel that one. So it really can depend.
Yeah.
Oh, should we get into the question game?
Yeah.
So how does this work, guys?
Well,
the percentage game. 10 questions have been asked to hundreds of teams that are quizzes. We know the percentage of those teams that got it right. The game is for our guests and hosts to guess what that percentage is. Every question asked needs an answer for the actual question and a percentage of what they think teams got it right. The way it's scored is that the difference between the percentage they guessed and the percentage that's actually correct is totaled together over the 10 questions, and 5 points is taken off per correct answer if they are a guest. The new twist in the game is that hosts and people heavily associated with Goose's quizzes don't get the 5 points off for their correct answers, but instead get 5 points added for incorrect answers. The person with the lowest score at the end of the game wins. Back over to you in the studio.
Thank you, Goose. That was very clear and concise, as always. So, we have a film round. It's quite an old film round we have here.
That's the round that's old, not the films that are old.
Oh, who knows?
Oh, who knows?
Who knows?
Oh, what
10
day.
Of Hollywood's bold finest questions statement. Coming your way here. So, get your stuff ready to play along at home. Question 1. In which year was the Academy Award-nominated film Boyhood released?
Never heard of this film before.
Oh, have you not?
I saw it in the cinema.
I know the answer. It's just...
What's it about?
What was the year?
It's about boys in the hood. No. No, wait. That's a different one.
That's
Boyhood.
I'm so sure I'm going to be 1 year off, but...
Yeah, so number... Write a year down, and then a percentage of teams that got that correct.
Like, I know where I was that year. I'm just trying to remember the year.
Okay, so Mark was alive.
Yeah.
I saw it in the cinema.
That narrows it down. Okay. So Scott's off to a good start here. So I'll rush everyone for a year and a percentage as well written down. Mark's really imagining the scene here. It was a late September, and the sun was setting somewhere.
For breakfast, I had toast set to medium brown.
That's it. So in what year was the Academy Award nominated film Boyhood released was the question. Scott, you said?
1990.
Mark?
2014.
2014. And Rossi?
2015.
2015. Oh. So it was released in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no. Really? 2014?
Yeah. Oh, man.
So where were you in 2014,
Mark?
I
thought it was going to be 16. Oh.
It was my first year in San Sebastian. That's how I remembered it, because I lived there for 2 years. So
way to start a story.
Yeah.
And then the percentage of teams that you think got that correct. Scott, you said?
50%.
50%. Mark?
30.
30. And Rossi?
45.
45. All right. So it is 52.6% of teams.
Oh, man. So I think this was written closer to when it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's fine.
Second one. This is, there's no context here, but I didn't write this round. It's a true or false one, so 50-50, true or false. In the original Mad Max, the director had to pay some of the crew in beer because of the low budget for the film.
And because they're Australian.
And because they're Australian.
Well, in that case.
So yeah, true or false. In the original Mad Max, the director had to pay some of the film crew in beer because of the low budget for the film. True or false? Everyone's seen Mad Max?
Mm. Not the originals.
What?
Did you see the Fury Road?
Is it not in the
I love Fury
Road.
Oh,
it's so good.
So, so good.
When I saw it twice in cinema.
Really? Really?
Is that where they have spray paint?
Again, you know?
Yeah. I seen it at the Cameo and like 20 minutes into the film, the projector wasn't really working. So there was like a green tint to the start of the film.
Oh, right. Oh.
But no one could figure out if it was meant to be part of the film.
Right, right.
Or it, yeah, or it's one of those films. So people were like, this is interesting. And then they had to like start it again and they gave us vouchers and stuff like that. I've always remembered being like, this is a bold artistic choice. I didn't remember reading about this hue to the film here.
Something like that happened to me when I was watching Balboa. And it was in like the montage part where it was like punching meat carcasses and stuff. And then the sound just stopped. I was like, well, that can't be right.
Wait a minute.
It's not very effective.
Yeah.
And then they had to turn the film off.
Oh, no.
It's always a shock when something goes wrong in the cinema. Like, you're not...
Yeah,
I mean...
Yeah,
it's like you don't know what to do.
They're only human.
Yeah.
I think I would just start crying until something was fixed.
Fix this. Anyway, Mad Maxwell. Is that beer thing true or false? What's everyone put? Scott, you said...
True.
And Mark?
T.
And Rossi.
True.
It is true.
Margaret Tennant. That's the beer.
That was the beer they drank. Yeah.
So in return for the work, he offered them slabs, which is how many cans, Scott?
24
wow. cans.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'm sure they would have been tickled by that.
Percentages, though. Scott, you went for...
74.
And Mark?
87.
87. Rossi?
60.
60. Oh, it's redemption. It's at 85.7%.
Yes. Oh,
so Mark is closest for that one.
Oh, boy.
Well done, Mark.
What a day.
It's a bit of a shame that it was Mel Gibson in that film where they pay people with beer.
I know, really.
Question three. This is slightly harder. It's multiple choice. So A, B, or C. Which of the following is not the name of a Bond girl character, it says? Is it A, Holly Goodhead, B, Kissy Suzuki, or C, Foxy Cleopatra? Yeah, so A, B, or C, not a Bond girl, and percentage as well. Everyone got an answer for this? Scott?
I wrote C.
You going to show us? Mark, you went for
C.
I went
for the one, yeah, I went for A, because I thought it was the least innovative name, and usually it gives them like Pussy Galore or some sort of like sexy name, so.
Yeah.
Well, what was it? What were the answers again?
The options were Holly Goodhead, Kissy Suzuki, or Foxy Cleopatra.
But I think the C is from Austin Powers.
Yeah.
Is that right?
It's Beyond Beyonce.
Yeah, and, Foxy Cleopatra.
Yeah, so the answer is C, Foxy Cleopatra, right. Who's from Goldmember. Holly Goodhead is from Moonraker. And Kissy Suzuki is from You Only Live Twice.
Ah, there you go.
So yeah, here we go. The answer is C, but percentages...
All right.
Who names their kid Kissy anyway?
Yeah. No, really. Who are you?
Scott, you said...
39%.
39. Mark?
74.
74. Rossi?
20.
Oh, this is a big selection of numbers we have here.
Oh, dear.
Well...
Some people might remember Goldmember or Austin Powers.
I think so. Because the answer is 81.6%.
Dang it.
Snaked.
Mark, again.
Mark knows his shizzle.
You really know, you know your Austin Powers films.
Apparently.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Question four. This is a coincidental one. Which American city is Rocky Balboa from?
Oh.
And what percentage of teams would know this as well? Oh, this is hearts now that you were just talking about it.
I know.
You don't have an answer.
I'm going to edit that out. I couldn't hear where it was from.
All these landmarks. Establishing shots aren't working on you.
The city with the steps.
And what's everyone put?
I put New York. Oh, I shouldn't.
We can do it reverse.
I've also drawn my emotions for how I'm doing in this.
That's a really confident face you've drawn. So a New York from Rossi. Mark, you said?
Philly. Philadelphia.
Scott?
Or Seattle.
Seattle. The answer is Philadelphia. Billy, percentages. Scott, you said
81%.
81. And Mark?
68.
68. Rossi?
I just assumed everyone was as ignorant as me, so I put 32.
That's the way. So we have an 81, 68, 32, 79.6%. That
that's
one.
Mark
good one,
again.
Scott. No, that was Scott Mark. With his 81. Yeah.
Scott was closest.
Nice.
Well done, Scott.
Oh, well done, then question five. We have some examples here. So then the actors are Mickey Blue Eyes, Notting Hill, and Love Actually. Who was in all those films?
Can't think of his name. Can I try and draw him?
Yeah. Normally, no. This is a different podcast, so no. So we had the actor who's been in Mickey Blue Eyes, Notting Hill, and Love Actually.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Mark is confident. Answer in percentage. All right.
Right.
Scott, you said...
Hugh Grant.
With a lovely spitting image as well.
It does look a bit like Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Mark, you said...
Hugh Grant as
Hugh
well.
Grant.
And he's drawn Hugh in his squid form.
Yes, I do.
And Rossi.
Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant. It's a full house for Hugh Grant. It is Hugh Grant.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Percentage. Scott, you said...
64.
64. Mark?
82.
82. And Rossi?
55.
55. It is 96.9%.
Oh, man, people know they're Hugh Grant.
Heck yeah, they do. We can do some team pictures now. Start off with your team name then, Mark. What have you put?
I've drawn a squid. A giant squid, to be precise.
Oh, okay.
Mainly because it's...
Not to scale.
The only thing... Yeah, it's not actually to scale. It's like, if ever I'm asked to draw something, that's what I draw. I don't know why.
Oh, okay.
Giant
interesting.
Squid. Yeah.
Can you please draw a pair of scissors?
It's a squid. It's a squid. I'm sorry. It's
any
a squid.
Psychologist at home sitting there.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Delve into Mark's
what does that
mind.
Mean? I am terrified of giant squids, though.
Are
maybe
really?
That's why.
Is that the
one thing? Giant squid.
It was 2 years ago. He was in San Sebastian. Like, and he just walked out of Boyhood.
There it was.
He was sitting on the pier and out of nowhere.
Tentacles. Suckers.
7 miles away, this creepy tentacle.
Okay. Mark's deathly afraid of giant squids. We're going to cancel that trip to SeaWorld then. Scott. Your team picture.
I put speech bubbles and like effects. What did you call them before? Effects things.
Like the, oh yeah, like on an automatic P or whatever. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
In the corner I wrote answered and percented. So, and Hugh
like
Grant's still in there.
Nice. Let's have a look at that. Okay. That's something.
Not the feedback I was looking for.
You've drawn something. Mark's was a bit deeper.
I'm also terrified of Hugh Grant, by the way.
We're all drawing what we're terrified of. Yeah. It's a coping mechanism. It's a way.
Yeah, I've come up with a Captain Harpoon Buffoon.
Oh.
So just looking at Mark squid and thinking how much I want to take Mark down in this competition.
Nice.
Excuse me.
I'll put that squid out of its misery, Mark.
It's teamwork there.
Good.
I can see some similarity there between Captain Harpoon Buffoon and...
Yeah.
And Mark.
He does have a beard.
Mark did bring his harpoon into the end.
Just in case. You never know. You never know.
Nice. Anyway.
Ember's close to the water, mind.
Question six is a bit of a longer one. So which 90s film is this quote from? And the quote is, 26 years ago, you played a game with a little boy down the streets, a game with drums.
Oh, dear. I have no clue.
This could be a make or break one here. Everyone got something?
Yes.
Yeah?
Never seen this film in full entirety.
Hey, whoa. Calm it. calm it, I said.
I don't think the other guys know me that well. But it's much of a clue.
It's the only film Scott's not seen in full. What's everyone put?
Oh, no. That's a much better answer. I was just guessing.
Scott, you said?
Jumanji.
And Mark?
Jumanji.
And Rossi?
Karate Kid.
Nice.
Have you put dreadlocks on your Hugh Grant for the Jumanji thing?
I wish that was true.
Just how I draw his hair.
Just how I draw hair. I got a really thick texture, okay?
So the answer is Jumanji.
Oh, yes.
For that one. You hear the drums in the background.
That's right.
Jumanji, percentages. Scott, you said?
79%.
79. Mark?
48.
48. Rossi? 15. 15. Oh, alternating again here.
Again, we're all over the place. My own reference.
So the Jumanji quote is sitting at 60.2%.
How do people know so much?
Well, they are in teams, I guess.
People like their 90s Jumanji.
People remember their
Jumanji. Is that an actual board game?
No.
No, I wish it was. Like, I mean,
he didn't really go into the game.
What?
They can make a computer game
between
out
that and Tron. You've been lied to.
The packaging was huge to fit all those rhinos in it.
That's why they're going extinct, man.
Yeah, they were all
the royal family will be on to you.
Over 1 million copies sold.
Oh, shit. Question 7. We're on to now. Question 7. We're jumping back a decade. Which 1980s film are the following characters from? We have Dr. Peter Venkman, Dr. Raymond Stans, Winston Zeddemore, and Dr. Egon Spengler. A confident nod from Mark. Answer and percentage for this one. We have Dr. Peter Venkman, Dr. Raymond Stans, Winston Zeddemore, and Dr. Egon Spengler. Everyone got something written down? Venkman, Stans, Zeddemore, Spengler.
I haven't actually seen this movie, I don't think.
Oh, what?
I know.
We'll find out.
Yeah, listeners. We'll find out if I'm correct or not.
Find out which movie Mark might not have seen. Okay, everyone good? Show me. Yeah. Scott, you said?
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. Mark?
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. And Rossi?
I hazarded Back to the Future 2.
Back to the Future 2. Precise, though.
Yeah.
It is Ghostbusters.
Ah, it was.
And you've not seen it, Mark.
No, but the four characters, all men, three of whom are doctors, it just kind of triggered Ghostbusters in my head.
The
I don't know why.
The main characters in it?
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
I've only seen it once.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
The main guys. Percentages, though. Scott, you said?
54%.
54. Mark?
81.
81. Rossi?
49.
It is in between some of them. 78.6% of teams got that right. For that one, we should
I think
go.
I've got to start assuming that people are good at this game.
There are three questions to go, so
just in time. Just,
you've warmed up the previous questions. You got something to watch on your flight back home, then, Mark?
Yes.
You can sit and watch Ghostbusters.
Well, that's where I watch Mad Max on my flight here.
On the flight.
Oh. Well, Fury Road.
What? Fury Road.
Yes.
Oh man, you got to see it on the big screen.
It's so good.
Wow. I want to watch it again. The back of the seat is. I sat pretty close.
The smallest screen possible. Question 8 in the film round. Which actress won the Best Actress Academy Award for a role in the film Black Swan?
Ah, ha ha.
So, an actress won the Best Actress Oscar, brackets, 2010. For a role in the film Black Swan.
I did see that movie.
I can see
that is one I've seen.
I can see your answers.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I've also can see seen your answers. This movie. On a plane?
No, on the big screen.
Everyone got something?
Yeah.
And a percentage as well?
Mm-hmm.
All right, turn them. Scott, you went for?
Natalie Portman.
Mark?
Natalie Portman.
Rossi?
Natalie Portman. I think we should disqualify that man over there for saying Nat Portman.
Who is?
Only
who
her
is?
Nearest and dearest call her that.
Who is Nat Portman?
I wrote Nathan Portman.
On consideration, I'll accept Nat Portman.
I wasn't being serious, but I was throwing him under the bus.
They have rules to abide by. Nat Portman leads you to the Nat Portman website, the fan site for Natalie Portman.
Oh.
Which I'm presuming you run? That's a seamless plug
Scott.
To get a website in there. Yeah, my answer is natportman.org. Check it out. It is Nat Portman is the answer. Sorry, Natalie.
Been a fan since Leon.
And percentages. Scott, you said?
92%.
92. Mark?
94.
Rossi?
79.
It is in the
90s. Damn.
For this one, it's 96.9%.
Oh, and I just want to say that what I get in this quiz doesn't reflect on that. I'm more awesome than you.
That's the disclaimer we put at the start and the end, so that's fine. That's right,
yeah. Question 9. We're on to here. In which European country is the film Pan's Labyrinth set?
Which country?
Yes.
Is
which
it set?
European country
mm-hmm.
is the film Pan's Labyrinth set?
The thing is that if you've seen Pan's Labyrinth and you haven't picked up on which country it's set, then you haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth.
That's true, yeah.
No, like, that's true.
Scott, have you seen Pan's Labyrinth?
I have not.
Okay, European country, Pan's Labyrinth. Go. Scott, you said?
Germany.
Germany. Mark?
Spain.
Spain. Rossi?
Spain. Are you adding to that drawing every time, Scott?
Yeah, I'm trying to add something from each of the films. Oh, nice. We...
Oh, let's see now. What did you add for Pan's Labyrinth?
For Pan? I haven't seen the film. I've got no idea what it's about.
He's holding a frying pan.
Can you see how lost he is? Is it actually about a labyrinth?
Yeah, it's, well, it's, yeah, there's a labyrinth thing.
Yeah, underground. Yeah.
Is David Bowie in there as well?
Bowie. Yes, Spain is the answer. Yes. Francoist Spain.
Yes.
Percentages, Scott, you said?
19.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello. Mark?
82.
And then the highest one this time.
88.
And 88 from Rossi. Well,
can I say, because I didn't know the answer, I panicked with the percentage and the 9 was already written there. So let's just put a 1 in front of it.
One was the easiest.
You should have kept that 9 because it's 69.4%.
Damn it!
And question 10. Who has played characters such as Victor Navorsky, Larry Crown, Detective Scott Turner, and Charlie Wilson? So one actor, all of those characters, Victor Navorsky, Larry Crown, Detective Scott Turner, Charlie Wilson. Oh,
I just don't know what the second name, which movie that was, but we'll find out.
I recognize Victor Navorsky vaguely.
Mm.
Who played that character?
A really stupid question that I'm not going to ask anymore.
Oh, wait, what are you going to ask?
I was going to ask if Larry Crown was from the Thomas Crown Affair. But...
Everyone got an answer. Turn.
Oh.
Scott, you said?
Tom Hanks.
Mark?
Tom Hanks.
And Rossi?
Keanu Reeves.
Tom Hanks.
Can we guess the movies?
Yeah.
Victor Navorsky.
Is that from The Terminal?
Yes. Larry Crown.
Where's that from?
I don't know that one. That's the one I didn't know.
Can I say the answer?
Yeah.
Larry Crown.
The movie Larry Crown.
I was so close. I was close.
Yeah, you were
Detective
close.
Detective Scott Turner.
Turner and Hooch.
Charlie Wilson.
Charlie Wilson's War.
Yes.
Someone pointed out Castaway.
Tom Cruise. Tom Hanks is pretty much only in films where he plays the guy and the film's named after him.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
Sully.
Yeah.
Yeah. Captain Phillips.
Yeah.
Big.
No. Larry Crown, Turner Hooch, Charlie Wilson.
That's true.
It's quite a big list of films he's been in.
What's the water one?
Splash.
Oh, yeah.
Senor Splash.
Also haven't seen that film.
And percentages. Who knows Tom Hanks? Scott, you said?
48%.
48. Mark?
I went for the reverse, 84.
84. Four, Rossi.
Ah, but you've got to guess which one I really mean. I went for 40%.
40%. You confused me there.
Why haven't I thought of putting four different answers
down? All right, so we have two fairly close ones, and then Mark.
Damn it.
It is at 50%.
Oh,
nice.
Big drop. So there we go. That's the end of the formal quiz proceedings. Okay, so let's do a little bit of a fun analysis. Question-wise, Scott, you got 3 wrong. Mark, you got 10 out of 10.
Oof. Well done.
We've been studying since last week.
Yeah. And felt shame.
And Rossi, you got 4 correct. But in terms of percentages, who was furthest away? I'll run through per person. Scott, you were 50 away at 1 point. And you're also 2 away, 1.4 away too, quite close. Mark, your worst answer was the last one there. A 34 you ended on there. Alas. But at 1 point, you're only 1.3 away. Oof. Rossi, your worst one was 61 pretty early on.
Oh, wow.
And then your best was the first question, actually. You're 7.6 away for the first one. So, the final proceedings in third place on 285.76, we have Rossi.
No way.
A round of applause.
Thanks, guys.
In second place on 206.94 is Scott.
Thank you.
And then winning this threesome, 122.18 is Mark. Who comes out first.
Well done, that man.
All right.
Fine show.
Smashed it.
Oh, okay. So there we go. Yeah. Rossi to Scott to Mark. Well done, everyone, competing in the film round.
That was good. I liked all those questions.
To watch now.
Yeah. Yeah. And start off with
Splash.
Senor Splash.
Does he meet a mermaid? Is that? Yeah. He meets a mermaid. Yeah, I'm not going to watch that.
Well, it's, I mean, it's.
Have you seen it, Mark?
Yeah.
Were you not afraid of giant squids?
Oh my God, terrified.
Get out of the water, Tom.
Get out, don't go in the water. You can't. Oh. It is. It's a debilitating fear. I can't go swimming in the middle of the ocean.
Is this why you order squid off menus? Just to reduce the population.
But you can't swim deep enough to where they all abide.
That is exactly correct.
Yeah, but they're probably long enough they could reach up.
That's what I'm scared of. Those long tentacles of theirs just
fishing for
wrapping
humans.
Around my legs and dragging me to the depths. That's the scary part.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's the end of the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a good one.
All right, thank you very much for that, Louis. Well done to everyone in the percentage game. But before we finish off, Deco Comics and Rossi, you're going to do a bit of a giveaway.
That's true.
So issues 1 to 4. We'll explain in the post that we put on Facebook what to do, how to do it, how to win. So if you want to get involved in that, absolutely do. Also, the Indiegogo, we'll put a link for that, or we'll put a link for your website and all your bits and pieces there.
Get your children reading and learning for fun on Christmas.
Absolutely.
Nice. It's weird, right?
Best time of year, probably. Don't quote me. Maybe. But, yeah, well, thank you very much for coming in, Rossi.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me here.
All right, well, let's finish up. That's goodbye from me. Goodbye from Ma.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Louis.
Goodbye.
And Rossi.
Ciao.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a fantastic time. Bye.